Welcome to everyone from Torah Anytime. If you like this shiur, then you can subscribe, follow below. Thank you very much. Parshas Re'eh, 5779, guys. It's Yud Dalet, Parak Yud Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, and here's how it starts. Zos HaBehema Asher Tochelu. These are the animals that you are allowed to eat. Shor, meaning all bulls. Seik Savim V'Seizim. There are lambs, you know, sheep, as well as goats. And then comes Pasuk He. Pasuk He is the seven wild animals that are out there. Ayol, Tzviv, Yachmor, Akko, Dishon, Tov, Zomer. We don't really know how to translate these animals. Some of them are somewhat obvious, but I translate it simply put, deer, gazelle, Yachmor, Ibex, Dishon, buffalo, and giraffe. Now we're going to have to look at each one of those and try to understand it. But first, Rashi tells us that there are two lessons to learn out of these psukim. One of them is a very obvious one. First of all, a chaya is the same thing as a behema when we're talking about these animals. Meaning, even though we know behemas are domestic animals and chayas are wild animals, it's clear that we don't care which one is which. Because it says, Zos HaBehema Asher Tochelu, here's the behemas that you're allowed to eat. And then it mentions in the next pasuk, Ayol, Tzviv, Yachmor, etc., which are clearly wild animals. So there's no question whatsoever, behema and chaya are interchangeable, even though they technically mean something. There's no problem, they could be considered in the same category as one another. Rav Hirsch says there's a reason for this lesson over here. There's an unbelievable reason. This indicates the characteristics that an animal needs in order to be considered kosher as food. Listen to this for a second. He says, first, they should be a chaya. What that means is their ability to live must not be compromised, which means they have to be a chaya. They can't be a trefa. They're not allowed to be a trefa. They have to be chaya. They have to be alive. Second, they have to be in control of their wildness. They need to be able to allow their wildness to show and know when not to show it. A behema can domesticate itself and know when to do what it needs to do and when to stop itself. And what that means is that these animals have a divinely ordained gift. And that gift is, it's allowed to be used by Jews to be able to eat them and to bring them up to another level. By eating a little bit of meat, you can raise that animal to another level. You can be raised to another level. Simply put, you eat meat on a chag or on Shabbos, you're doing a mitzvah. You eat korbanos that are brought to the Mizbeach, up in the Beis HaMikdash, can be brought up to the higher level. The only time that they have that special dignity is when they have both. They're a chaya, meaning not a trefa, and a behema, where they can domesticate themselves, because you can't bring chayos to the Mizbeach. You can't bring something that's purely a chaya to the Mizbeach itself, to be able to live and to understand what it means to live. Obviously, you want to apply that to ourselves. The idea behind every single one of us is to be a chaya, to live, to mamish, live our lives, and to want to live our lives, and be happy about what we have, but yet to be a behema. To concentrate on what's good for us and what's bad for us. Stay away from those things that are bad for us and keep in what's good for us. By being that chaya and the behema, that becomes a good quality that we can take on for ourselves. Of course, there are other animals that have some of these characteristics, like horses and donkeys, etc. But they don't have the characteristics of the split hooves and the chewing the cud, which you obviously need in order to be kosher, so that doesn't count. So although they're also nice and yasher, whatever it is, there are people out there that are nice and yasher and good people. But since they're not doing all for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a little bit different. They'll get their Olam Haba. They'll get the reward in the world to come. They'll have something, but it's going to be a little bit different than what it is. They're not chayos. They're chayos and behemas. They're able to hold themselves back, but there's a difference. You still need to do something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I could tell you a story just very quickly. I was in Northwest Georgia 2 weeks ago, and I met at Target. I was looking for bread, and I couldn't find anything that was kosher. And the only thing I could find were these buns that had a hechsher on it, but they were whole wheat, so it's barely human food. So I was like looking around, and these two African-American guys came up to me, and they said, "Are you looking for something?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm looking for kosher, you know, kosher buns." They said, "There's nothing here except for the whole wheat." I'm like, "Dude, who eats whole wheat buns with hot dogs and hamburgers? It's like, it's anathemic to anyone." So they said, "Yeah, we know. And then they looked at me, and they're like, "Hey, are you Jewish?" And I'm like, "The nose, right?
That
the
was
nose."
The first thing when they said, "Oh, that's the wheat one."
Yeah.
You weren't like, huh?
I figured, like, no. They said, like, "We've had that question before, and these are the only ones," right? So it was okay, right? But they said, like, "You're Jewish." So they said, "Yeah." They're like, "Can we ask you a question?" Really, one of the guys. The other goes, "Man, don't do that." But he said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Of course." So he said, "Question is, so do you believe in Yashka?" Awesome, right? Absolutely awesome. First, he asked me about the rapture. I said, "No, I believe in the Old Testament, not the New Testament." It was a whole thing. So he asked me, "We don't." I said, "I believe that Yashka might have existed, but no, I don't believe he was the Messiah. I went through, etc." And then he asked me, "So what do you believe in?" So I gave him my 30-second elevator pitch. I always tell people, you got to have an elevator pitch. You got to have your 30-second elevator pitch that if you have to explain Judaism to someone, you have something. So I gave him my elevator pitch. I said, "Here we go. Here's my 30-second elevator pitch. This is why I believe in Judaism. This is what I am." After I finished, the guy looked at me and he's like, can I ask you another question? He was like all serious now. He's like, can I ask you another question? I was like, of course. He's like, I'm going to change the wording. Am I going to get him? Am I going to Gehenna because you're right and I'm wrong? And I'm like, no, hold on. Everybody has their own thing, man. You do your thing. I do mine. You have your God. Believe in your God. Believe in the God part. Maybe not the Son part, but believe in the God part and go to church. Do what you need to do, right? And we have our thing. Everything's different. I could have converted all of Target in Northwest Georgia. You know what I'm saying? Like, that could have been my, like, whole Gayrus expended. But the idea is that, yes, there are people. Yeah. It was, that person seemed like a good person. Really did seem like a really nice person. Who was out there. That doesn't mean of course they're going to get a reward. Of course there's going to be something for them. But there's a difference if you're doing it for a Kadosh Baruch Hu or if you're doing it for your own self-service, your own needs, and everything that's out there. And that's the idea, to be a Chaya, but also a Behemah at the same time. Says the Shach. Parsha Shmini, it says over here, the wording is, in Shmini, it says, Zos HaChaya that are kosher. Over here it says, Zos HaBehemah that are kosher. The reason for this is that before Bnei Yisrael sinned with the Egel Azov, Shmini was said before the Egel, according to one opinion in the Gemara. Shmini was given before the Egel Azov. Before that, they were free from the Malach HaMavis. If they were free from the Malach HaMavis, they would live for a very long time, if not forever. Therefore, they could eat whatever they wanted to without any problem. It wouldn't hurt or damage their normal selves. They wouldn't have any point whatsoever. At that point, they could eat chayos. Chayos were, you know, deer, venison, and all that type of meat, and it wouldn't bother them. It wouldn't be anything. So the stringy meat wouldn't be something that's bad for their system. Unfortunately, after that, we became people that can only eat really behemoths. If we get involved with chayos, it's too hard for us, it's too difficult, the animals are not subservient to us, because after the egel azov, we sinned, we got brought down a level, we're now in the level of behemoth. We eat behemoth food, but we're not a chayos food. Says the Shach, that's what happened. Over there, we could eat chayos, now we can only eat behemoths. But not only that, says the Shach, in Parsha Shmini, we mentioned the siman of the kosher animals. We say that they have split hooves and chew their cud, but we don't mention what animals are kosher. Here, we mention the simanim, and we also mention the 10 animals that are kosher. We go through 3 and 7. Says the Shach, that's because these psukim hint to what they did wrong with the Egel Azov. Because remember, Sefer Devarim is a Musar Sefer. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling it over to Bnei Yisrael to tell them what they did wrong. So why is he going through the animals again? We're not in the mitzvah portion yet. Not until the very, I guess you can technically say the parts of Re'eh are the mitzvah portion. But he says this is still part of the Musar. And the Musar is, he goes up to them and he says, sure, guys, the Egel Azov. The shore reminds you, that's the bull. That's the Egel Azov. How could you have done such a thing? And then he said, Sek Savim V'Seizim. He says, Se Sin Hei stands for Shehu Harug. It's a dead animal. It's not an idol. It's not a god that you should listen to. It's a nothing. They're already dead. You should think of them as that. And that's why he brings down Sek, Savim, Izim. You think any of these things are gods? They're nothing. And then the 7 animals that live out in the world refer to the Midbar. They're these chayos that live out there. Those 7 animals refer to the 7 deaths that Klal Yisrael went through in the Midbar. One by the Egel Azov itself. One by the Meraglim, one by the Misonanim, the people that complained. One by Shittim, where they sinned with the woman. That one by Tavera, where they had a burning desire. By Korach and by the Nechoshim, the Srufim, the snakes that were burning them, that were destroying them. 7 times they went to death, and that's what it refers to by the 7 chayos over there, out there in the world. In Brachos, Dalet Amadeus, it says the Malach HaMavis takes 8 flights to come to the world. It takes Michoel 1 flight, Gabriel 2, Elio and Avi 4, and the Malach HaMavis 8. And he says, the pshat behind that idea over here is that our job is to knock down those 8 kochos. The idea is to take these kosher animals and bring them up a level. That's why there's 7, so to speak, in this. To bring that up so that we're no longer in the 8 kochos of that Malach HaMavis. We're no longer knocked down over there. He says he heard from a great chacham named Rav Avram Peretz, who says he saw this somewhere, but he wasn't sure where, that the reason why we end our davening, render davening. Now again, this is Nusach Svard. I don't know if anybody does this here, but in Eretz Yisrael they do it all the time. Amr Rabbi Elazar, Amr Rabbi Chanina, right? Talmidicham Marbim Shalom Ba'olam, Shnamar, etc. Those words. In that paragraph, if you include the word Shalom and Shalva, both mean peace and tranquility, he says Shalom and Shalva 8 times in that paragraph. He says the reason why is to knock down the Malach HaMavis who comes down in 8 flights. That's why we end our davening that way. So anybody who davens Nusach Svard every day, or Svardi, or anybody who davens on Shabbos and says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Chanina, at the very end of their davening, the reason why you're saying it is because Shalom and Shalvar 8 times said the 8 flights of the Malach HaMavis are knocked out completely. And it's based on this, the idea of the 7 chayos to also knock down, the idea of where the Malach HaMavis comes from to be able to go through. It's an amazing idea that the Shach brings down. There's a second thing we learn from over here. That's all the first thing. The second thing we learn from over here, says Rashi, there are more animals that are tameh than there are that are kosher. There are more birds that are tahor than there are that are tameh. That's why we mention all the tameh birds. But there are more animals that are tameh than there are that are kosher. Now, again, I don't know how this goes, because yes, we mentioned 10 animals over here, but I don't know if these 10 animals are genuses, in other words, categories of animals, or if they're specific animals that we're only matzoring these. I really don't know. I have absolutely no idea over here. The limud to be learned, though, the limud, what you can learn from over here, says Miyam Loez, is that a rav should always teach his students in the most concise, short way possible. In other words, if you go into long, lengthy discussions, the kids aren't going to pay attention. You all know from when you were in school, right? You didn't want to be there when there was that long, four-hour-long speech. You didn't want to be there for it. When it's something that goes on and on and on, it's hard. It's really hard. But you'll be there if you can get it as concise and right there as possible. You get everything short and right to the point, then you're good with it. And therefore, the Torah says, I'm going to give you the least amount of animals that you need to know about. If the kosher animals are less, then I'm going to give you the kosher animals. If the tummy birds are less, then I'm going to give you the tummy birds. That's what I'm going to do, because Miyam Loez says that's how you're supposed to teach people the way to go through. And I think that's obvious for everything we do in life. Whenever you're giving a training, whenever you're dealing with anybody else out there, the easiest way to do it is to do it in such a way in which you're getting all your points across in the shortest way possible. By far the shortest way possible. I found that a lot of people do something tricky now. I have to do a lot of online trainings, because... okay, I won't blame the places that I work for. But regardless, I have to do a lot of online training, especially for like cyber issues and like stuff like that. Right? So it comes up all the time where like you're working for a certain system. If it becomes part of a bigger system, then they're eventually going to make you do that. See, here's what they do. They give you these 2.5-minute videos you have to watch. But there's like 5,000 of them. Right? So they think like, oh, it's not a 45-minute speech. It's just 5,000 2.5-minute speeches. And that's okay. But the truth is, they're right. Because I'll watch 2.5 minutes, I'm like, all right, it's not so bad, I'll try another one. And then all of a sudden, it's three days later, right? It's already like Erev Shabbos, like an hour before Shabbos, and I'm like, how did this happen? How in the world did this happen? But that's the idea. The idea is that if you do things concisely, you're able to get more in. That's the idea behind it. Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Although you did try convincing me to make like 5 minutes and keep ending everything. Whatever. It's clear that these psukim are separated according to Behemos and Chayos. Pasuk Dalet is listing the three domestic animals. Pasuk Hay is the 7 wild animals. And I get that. There's the 3 domestic, the 7 wild, right? And I totally get that. It makes sense that they're divided up in that category right over there. However, I think there's an idea behind it. Now, again, I'm not going to darshan on this because I'm not 40 yet. I'm so close. But I think the idea can be understood the same way that they understand Parshas Va'era and Parshas Bo. Those who know, Parshas Va'era has 7 makos. Parshas Bo has 3 makos. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen, among others, say that there are levels. And we all know that there's supposed to be 10 levels that are called the Sphiros. The 3, the top ones are Chochmah, Bina, and Das. And then you get into the ones that we see by Sphira, right? You get into the Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Idea. And maybe that the 7 Chayos refer to what we deal with in this world, the Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes thing. And the top 3, you know, Chochmah, Bina, and Das, refer to the 3 Behemos that are something that's a little bit beyond their world, something that's a little bit there. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. I didn't see it anywhere. I wanted to find it somewhere, and I didn't look that hard, I'll be honest with you. But I thought that that would be one idea behind it. But the Baal HaTurim says that it's Keneged the Aseres HaDibros. 10 kosher animals, 10 commandments in the Torah itself. He brings it from the Midrash Tadshah. The Rokeach says it's in the Gemara in Chulin. We don't have that Gemara. We don't have a Gemara that says such a thing. But maybe what that means is, and what I think is, if you eat proper foods, you'll understand the Torah better. Meaning, if you fill yourself filled with garbage, you won't be able to have your brain working in the proper fashion. You won't be able to learn the mitzvos properly. But if you learn properly, if you work hard, if you do things like that, well, then it's different. Then you'll be able to understand what you're learning. You'll be able to get to a different level. That's the idea behind it. Maybe you'll be able to get somewhere else. The Miyam Loez said there are differences between behemoths and chayas. 2 major differences in a behemoth and a chaya. A behemoth, you cannot eat the chelev of the animal. The chelev is like the fat that's around the intestines. Don't worry about the fat that's on your steak. Don't be like, oh my gosh, they're feeding me a sir. That's not an issue. That chelev is not an issue. It's the chelev around the intestines, the chelev around the stomach area. That chelev is usur by a behemoth. It's mutter by a chaya. You can have the chelev of a chaya. You're allowed to have, if you have venison, you can have that type of stuff. By buffalo, questionable if buffalo, I shouldn't say so obviously, right, whether buffalo nowadays is considered a chayah or behemoth. What?
Buffalo and cow the same?
No. They're not. They're technically in totally different categories. Bovine? Like, they're not bovines. Buffaloes are not. it depends on which, like, there's many different types of buffalo. So there's the American buffalo, which are also known as bison. There are water buffalo, Cape buffalo, etc. There are those that live in Africa, there are those that live in Asia. So they are all in a totally different category. In fact, American bison technically are in a totally different category on its own. They're not even in the bovine or the regular buffalo category. They're completely different. But you could, I don't know how the Torah classifies it. So I'm not sure that that would be part of this. I'm not positive, but it's possible. But the chalev, technically, of a buffalo might be mutter. You might be able to eat that type of stuff. That's one. Number two, and the second one is kisui adam. When you shecht a behema, meaning like a regular animal, a cow, a sheep, a goat, you don't have to cover the blood. After you shecht it, the blood's on the ground, you don't have to cover it up. By a chaya, if you shecht it, you have to cover up the blood. Same way by a bird. By birds, you have to cover up the blood. There's a mitzvah of kisui adam. It applies by chayas, not by behemoth. So there is a difference between a behemoth and a chaya. Those two are the major ones. There might be others as well. But this makes sense now. Why the Gemara would differentiate. Why the Pasuk, I'm sorry, would differentiate. There's shor, seksavim, seizim, which are behemoths. They have one category. You can't eat their chalev. You don't have to do kisui adam. And then there's the chayas. And the seven chayas, you would be able to eat their chalev, and you have to be able to do kisui adam.
Differential domestication versus non-domestication?
Technically, the Gemara says there are simanim based on their horns and how to tell whether they're domestic and chayas. It's very complicated. It's in the Gemara in Chulin, Pei Amad Aleph, and Pei Amad Beis. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not positive that I fully understand it. Even the way that it describes it, I would need like an art school Gemara to fully understand. They're talking about Mefutzalos, these different types of horns and how they turn. And even then, I don't know how art school translates it, like, you know, or anything, like Sansino, any of the translators, how they know exactly what it is. It's very complicated when you're dealing with stuff like this, especially with nowadays, because it's not like what it was 300 years ago. It's completely different. And really, here's the problem. Rashi and Chulin Peyom Abay says, these are the only animals that can be eaten. This list of 10 is exclusive. If you find another animal that might have split hooves and chew their cud, you won't be able to eat it. That's how Rashi and Chulin says. It's these 10 animals, and that's it, right? The only animal not mentioned is the tachash. Anybody remember the tachash? The tachash skin, the unicorn skin, right, that went by the Mishkan itself. That's not mentioned because it was only lefishah. It didn't exist for all time, and therefore, we didn't mention the tachash. The tachash is not there whatsoever. But we have a problem, because we don't understand what this category is. And even then, sure, let's just do bulls, right? Bulls, cows. You know how many different categories of cows there are? Look, there's 1,000 different species of cow. 1,000. They say breeds of cows. Breeds of cows. And if you say, well, they're basically the same, they look nothing alike. You can take certain cow breeds and compare them to the others. Technically, there are yaks that are in this breed. Yaks look nothing like regular cows. Absolutely nothing. And there are some cows, these huge longhorn cows, you see some of them that are right over here. These things look nothing like regular cows. Absolutely nothing. Sheep, there are 1,100 breeds of sheep. There are 200 breeds of goats. Right? How are we supposed to know what's considered the shor six? If you're going to say shor is just a bull, well, what do? There's so many different breeds. What's a bull? What is that exactly? When I tell you that you can have chicken eggs, do you even know what kind of chicken you're eating? There's thousands of breeds of chickens. Thousands. We usually have leghorn chickens. That's usually the one that have the eggs that everybody's eating. But there's so many different types. We have no idea. We have absolutely no idea. And you've never checked into it. There's no one here that has ever checked into it. So you have no clue. What's a real shor? What's a sex female seizim? So if Rashi's saying this is the only one, well, clearly it's not exhaustive. Because it must be categories. The category of shor, the category of seksavim, and the category of seizim, and that includes everything, because what else are you going to do? But even when you get to the next one, there are 43 recognized species of deer. Okay? There are 91 recognized species of antelope and gazelle. Antelope and gazelle altogether. You have altogether so much more of all the other animals that are out there. What in the world are we allowed to eat? What are we not allowed to eat? They all have split hooves and chew their cud. There are a few exceptions, like certain animals, like the musk deer, is a little bit weird in their horns and their hooves. But other than that, like everything seems to be pretty darn obvious. What are you supposed to do with all this? So the Chasam Sofer in Tshuvas Yoredeya, Siman Ayin Daled, brings up this whole Gemara. And he asks, I don't understand, why do we have to mention all these 10 animals? Is there a point? Just tell me. Split hooves, chew their cud, that's it. You don't have to tell me anything different. Why do you have to mention, and by the way, let me list them for you. By the fish, how many fish are mentioned in the Torah? How many different breeds of fish? None, right? Why not? Why not tell me the fish? Irrelevant. Why? You just need fins and scales. So the exact same thing by, I'm so proud of myself, all week long I've been saying skins and fails every single time. I find, I got it, I'm proud of myself. All right, anyway, but by fish you have that. So do my animals. It says straight out, split hooves and chew their cud. That's all you need. That's all you need. By the locusts, I totally get it. The names are different because the simanim are weird, right? I totally get it. By birds, the simanim are only mentioned in the Gemara. They're not in the Chumash themselves, so you have to mention the actual. Here, these animals, you're mentioning every single one that's kosher, plus you're mentioning the two simanim. Why do you need that? He brings down the most unbelievable answer. There's a Rambam in Hilchos Machalos Isurus. I've mentioned this before. Perek Beis Halacha Gimel. Anybody remember this one? Perek Beis Halacha Gimel? Says, you are not allowed to eat human beings. Eating human beings is over on an asay.
Shucks.
You know what it's over on? Zosachaya asher tochelu. This is the animal that you're allowed to eat. Not human beings. That's the asay. You're over on an asay if you eat a human being. So don't. Don't do it. Says the Rambam. The Rambam says it's learned out from that pasuk. Now granted, it's not this pasuk, Zosa Behema, but Zosachaya, it's learned out from Shmini. But he learns it out from right over there. Learns out from right over there. Says the Chassam Sofer based on that Rambam, right? Says the Chassam Sofer. That's why we have to list you these 10. Tell you these 10 are kosher and not human beings. So the whole reason why we go through these 10, listen to this. You might have thought that human beings are in the category. They're not. They're usher. Can't eat human beings. And therefore it mentions these 10. Is that an unbelievable Chassam Sofer? Chassam Sofer and Tshuva says this.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, this is different. That's blood. That's an issue of blood. That's an issue of blood. Blood is another issue. Basically, this is all based on a machlokas that's mentioned in the Gemara and Daf Samach and Ksuvis. There's
crazy.
A Rashba, a Ritva, and a Ramban right over there in Ksuvis. This Rambam is a Chiddush. The Rambam is a Chiddush because everybody else says eating human flesh is Asur Midi Rabbanan, not Asur Midi Oraisa. Asur Midi Rabbanan. And really, the reason why is because if you're going to eat that, you should stop. Did you hear about the restaurant, by the way? That they did the whole thing in, I think it's South Carolina. Do you hear that there was a news story that just came out not so long ago? Nobody heard it? You can probably find it. You'll check it up later. I think it just came out. They're doing all this. Some weird thing happened. And everybody, they closed down like this whole area. There's a suspicion, and there's rumors. No one knows if it's true, that Dairy Queen was serving these hamburgers. The hamburgers were too good.
Oh, that's right.
And they suspect that it's human flesh. You can check it up. But that's the claim. There were people in all these suits going in or whatever it is, but they just had it. I believe it's South Carolina. It just came out like 2 days ago. Just
said,
crazy, right? Absolutely crazy. It's obvious that you can't chas v'shalom eat. Even the Ramban is like, I don't even understand what, even if it's only us or me to Rabbanan, when would you do it? You can't kill a human being. You can't injure a human being. Can't cut off the flesh of a human being, right? And if it's after death, it's usher to get benefit from a dead body. So when would this apply? Right? There's no shaykhis. Well, a question of Abraham Minachai does apply by a human being, but right, it's a shayla. But yes, what you said before about blood, as long as the dam isn't porish, if you catch it before it starts bleeding or you have a blood in your mouth, then you are allowed to, put it in your mouth and that's no problem. If there's blood all over there, you can't use your mouth to lick it off, right? But if it's coming out, you can go like that in order to get rid of the blood. That you're allowed to do. You can also swallow, technically, cuticles. The little pieces of skin that are by your whatever it is. You can technically swallow them. That's not usher. Also, it gets a little bit disgusting, but there are also stuff that you can pick.
Ogres?
Yeah, it's not usher.
Oh,
no, I don't want to. There are stories that don't need to be said. So either way, but there are. Yeah, no. That's a story for maybe later on. Maybe later. Lucas is more than that. But yes, technically, think about it, though. Why isn't that Aver Minachai? Why is that not Aver Minachai? You take it out of your body and you put it inside, you eat it.
Is that considered an Aver?
Technically, it's a part from a live animal, so why wouldn't it be usher? But it's not. Aver Minachai by human beings might be a little bit different. And plus, when it comes to this, whatever. Don't do it. Okay, that's the answer. The answer is don't do it. And that should be obvious. We don't have to go through. But the Chassam Sofer, that's that. However, come on. Let's go. The Chassam Sofer. I'm not going to argue on the Chassam Sofer because the Chassam Sofer is... I'm not even going to say he's greater than anything I'll ever... The Chassam Sofer and I do not belong in the same... We're not in the same millennium. You know what I'm saying? Like, let alone around the same area. But I don't understand. And this really is not just my question. It's the question that the Ksav BaKabbalah asks. He says, you're going to list 10 animals to tell you not to eat a human being? That sounds weird. That sounds really weird. Okay, so Ksaba Kabbalah answers. He gives two different answers. He says there's another reason. Simanim different by over here are given by the Torah to differentiate between the kosher and the not kosher animals. But how do you differentiate between a behema and a chaya? So you know why we list these animals? So you know what's a behema, what's a chaya. If you look at an animal, you say, what is this? And now you'll know. If it's a shore, sekzivim, seizim, it's a behema. And if it's any of the others, the isle, tzvi, yachmur, etc., then it's a chaya. Says, that's why the Ksava Kabbalah says, that's why we have to know which one is which, so you know each one, and you can put it in its own category if it's a behema or a chaya itself. That's how the Ksava Kabbalah says. The problem with that answer is that there is a Mishnah in Kilayim that says there's a machlokis about a shor habar, that's a wild ox. Rashi says the to'o in Pasuk Hey is a wild ox, a shor habar. It's a kasha if it's a chaya or a behema. It's a machlokis Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. But according to what we just said, anything in that second pasuk is automatically a chaya. So why is there a machlokas? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like the way he's saying Ksava Kabbalah, why are we listing them? These are behemas, these are chayas. But that means everyone should agree that a to'o, the wild ox, is a chaya. But that's not an agreement, that's a machlokas. So that seems to be off. He then gives another answer. I would have thought that maybe they're in the same category, the same min. Here's a halacha. Has anybody done smicha before? Have you ever done yoredeya? Comes Taruvas, Basar B'chalav. Okay, in those halachos, in Simen Tzadi Ches, there's a famous Ramah, where it's a little bit strange, but there's a difference between min b'mino and min b'sh'eino mino. If you have two things of the same taste, if they taste the same, they get mixed in together, it's batel barov. Meaning the majority is kosher, even if the minority is not kosher. If it's 2-1, really 2-1, it's like more than 1-1, then you can be mevatel. You can mevatel, you can nullify it, and you're good.
So wait, a meatball with chazer and chicken?
No. So it's a little bit different. But either way, but regardless, it's min bimino. It would have to be the same type, literally the same type. It would have to be like treif cow and kosher cow got mixed in the same thing. Min bimino, if it's mamish the same thing, then min bimino, you're batel barov. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into the actual what we do when it comes to this, but min b'she'eno mino, if it's two different types, like let's say, two things that taste totally different from one another, then it's only batel b'shishim. If you have 60 times that amount, then it's batel. Okay? That's the idea. Min b'mino versus min b'she'eino mino. So he says, if you know these are different animals, right, and the Torah lists them as different animals, then they're min b'she'eino mino. And if it's min b'she'eino mino, then they're batel b'shishim. You might have thought that if they're all kosher, then let's say cow meat would be the same thing as goat meat. And if you have cow meat and goat meat together in the same place, maybe it's min bimino, because the Torah doesn't differentiate between all of them. It's kosher meat. Maybe it's all the same. And even though the taste is different, maybe it's all the same. Maybe it's all the same. Comes the pasuk and tells me that no, it's got a different name. It's got a different name. That's good enough to make it min b'she'eino mino. And the Ramah says it doesn't have to do with taste. It has to do with names. It goes with names. So now that we see there are different names, that's that. There's a problem with that, though. The problem with that is that it's clear from all the other achronim over there, even though we do paskin like the Ramah, at least the Marshal, the Taz, the Agur, everybody paskins like the Ramah, but it seems from all the other achronim over there, every single one, right, we paskin that if it has a different name by us, that makes it min b'she'eino mino. I mean, it doesn't have to be like a shor and a sekzavim. If we call it something different, it's good. Like by fish. Right? Does the Torah differentiate between any of the fish? No, right? But we would hold salmon and tuna is two different things. It's min b'she'eino mino. Because they have two different names. But it's not mentioned that way in the Torah. So clearly it doesn't matter what the Torah says. So that's another problem. That's the Beis Yosef that argues over there. So I've got one other answer. And this is such a beautiful answer. And I'll tell you, this past Monday, I was stuck in New York. I had two weddings, one on Sunday night, one on Monday night. And on Monday morning, I really had nothing to do. So I sat down in the Yeshiva Five Towns, and I found a couple Sfarim, and I found something I really like, the Chavetzelos HaSharon. I never get to learn this Sefer. It's a tremendous Sefer, written by a tremendous Gadol. The name slips in my mind right now, and I should have said it, should have written it down, I forget. But the Chavetzelos HaSharon is a great Sefer. It's huge, mamish huge, like 30 volumes. It's huge, El Chumash. And he talks about everything. And I looked at the Chavetzelos HaSharon looking for something, and he had an entire piece on this on this piece of the Ksav HaKabbalah and the Chasam Sofer. He speaks about it at length. And he says, he first of all doesn't understand the question in the first place. The Gemara should have answered it, etc. But then listen to what he says. He gives an amazing answer. There's a famous Chakira about Simanei Tahara. And it's the following. The Chakira is the following. Are these Simanim of split hooves and chewing the cud, are they the reasons for the animal being Tahor? Is this the reason it's Tahor? You know why it's Tahor? Because it has split hooves and chews its cud. Or are they symbols that through them you can see this must be a kosher animal? Is it mitaher the animal? Or is it just a symbol that if it has it, you know it's kosher? But really there's something else entirely. So I wrote to most of you when I told you about this shir, I told you, right, that this is going to be like, what really koshers an animal? What really makes it kosher? Is it really the split hooves and the chewing of the cud? Or is it something else entirely? Chavetz Chaim Sharon gives a chiddush based on a ritva, and I'm not going to go into all details, you can see it over there, but he says based on the ritva, that there's an amazing idea here, not the ritva, I'm sorry, the Maharit. Maharit says, if an animal is born from a cow with hooves that are stuck together, meaning uncloven hooves, but it's born from a kosher cow, and you see this cow that's born, and you look at its hooves, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's got hooves that are not split. You can still eat that cow. Why are you allowed to eat the cow? There are two symbols that make an animal kosher, right? Split hooves and chews its cud. This animal chews its cud, this baby chews its cud, but it doesn't have split hooves. Why is that kosher? The Maharit says, because the Simanei Tahara, these Simanim, are just that. They're Simanim. If you see them, you know that the animal is kosher. But it's not what makes the animal kosher. You know what makes the animal kosher? The fact that we know that it's a kosher animal. The fact that it's named as a kosher animal. A shor is a kosher animal. A seksavim is a kosher animal. And a seizim is a kosher animal. What are the symbols to know what is a shor and a seksavim and a seizim? Split hooves and chews its cud. But that's not what makes it kosher. What makes it kosher is that it is a shor. It is a seksavim. It is a seizim. So why did the Torah mention all 10 of them? Says the Chavetz Chaim Sharon. Isn't it obvious now? The Torah mentions all 10 because it's only kosher because we know what they are. You know what the name is. If you didn't have the name, just because it had those things, that's simanim, but that doesn't tell you what it is. You need to know what the animal is. And once you know what the animal is, once you have that down, then it's an idea behind it. There's a tremendous proof to this. There's a chazal that everybody knows. Zos hachaya, zos habehema. That Moshe Rabbeinu was shown the kosher animals. He was confused. He heard from a Kadosh Baruch Hu what was kosher. And he said, Hashem, I'm confused. I don't know. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this animal is kosher. And he showed him a cow. This animal is kosher, showed him a sheep. This animal is kosher, shows him a goat. And it goes through the aisle, Tzvi, Yachmor, etc. Goes through every single one and says, this is kosher, this is kosher, this is kosher. Why did he need that? Guys, why would he need that? Why not just look at every animal and see if it chews its cud and has split hooves? Is that so hard? Why would that be such a problem? The answer is, because that's not really what makes the animal kosher. What makes the animal kosher is knowing what the animals are. You must know the names. You got to know the names. You got to know what these animals are. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to see the animals with his very eyes. He had to see the shor. He had to see the tzvi. He had to see the ayol. That's what made it kosher. It's a brilliant answer. And that's why we list all 10 of them over here. Yeah.
How does that work today when we're able to do genetic manipulations or chimeras or whatever that is?
Yeah, chimeras. I honestly, no idea. There is, listen, you're dealing with the first Parak of Bechoros, where the first Parak of Bechoros says, what happens if you have, let's say, a non-kosher animal that breeds with a kosher animal, and you have an animal that's born from a cow, and it's a pig? What happens then? So there's, yes, as long as it has one simen that's like its mother. As long as it has something that's like its mother. So you're dealing with certain things. Those are real shilas. And it's something that you looked at the Gemara Bechoros maybe 200 years ago, you were like, come on, who's going to deal with that ridiculousness? This doesn't make any sense. But nowadays, with genetic testing and the way it's going, it seems like you could do anything. You want to be able to do stuff like that. It seems like you have the ability, right? You have the ability to. Listen, we have meat that was born in laboratories, right? Actual meat. What's the kashrus of that meat?
It's parv.
Yeah, is it parv? Is it fleishik? Is it fleishik? Can you have a burger that's totally parv? I mean, we have these like veggie burgers that taste like death, right? But do you have anything else that's like, do you have it? You could have a regular burger that tastes like a regular burger that looks, you could even, you know, paint it, says looks brown and everything. It's a regular burger, but it's totally parv. Totally parv. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah, those are the great kashas that I'm not going to be.
Look, the milk, if you shech the cow with milk in the udder, the milk is fleshy.
Yeah, even that. You're dealing with kechal, you know, depending on how you want to spell it. Kaf chaf lamed. Kaf ches lamed. Which is an entire siman in Shulchan Aruch. What happens when you have the udder of the animal? What's the halacha by the udder of the animal? There are certain people. What?
No, there's really a question about
it. No, it's a real shiloh of what the milk inside the udder is after you shech the animal and then you cut open the udder. What?
The burgers
are for sure parv. Yeah, for sure parv. I mean, if they're created entirely from a lab, just be careful. You never know with people. You know, they're just like, yeah, it was from a lab. Take it, have some ice cream with it. No problems. There shouldn't be any problem. You got to be careful with that, but that's that. But each one has that. Now, the rest of this year, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do right now. I have so much more that goes down over here. As you saw, there's a lot of pictures that go on the back itself. I'm not going to go into, there's an Ibn Ezra that goes to the Vav that's missing over here. There's an amazing idea that's brought down by the Targum Yonasan, the Balaturim. And obviously, we're not going to be able to go through all of this. I'll just tell you my ideas really quickly that happens over here. The Mi'am Lois, the Ibn Ezra, etc. The Ibn Ezra says the following. The Tzvi and the Ayol are easy to understand. I don't have to answer that whatsoever. They don't need to be translated. It's somewhat obvious for everybody over there. However, you can't just make assumptions, because the Mamloi says, if you make the wrong assumptions, you could be eating the wrong animal, you could be totally off. And as the Chavetz Chacham said, you have to know what the animals are. You have to have somewhat of a Masorah that goes through over here. For this reason, if you look at the Art Scroll Chumash, in Pasuk Hey, it basically doesn't translate any of the words. It translated as Yachmur, right? Akko, Dishon, To'o, Zomer. Because there's really nothing you can say over there. Even Rav Shamsha Rafal Hirsch. Rav Shamsha Rafal Hirsch is into translating everything. Even Rav Hirsch doesn't translate these words. Doesn't translate them. The editor added on his opinion. I mean, well, why that? We don't care who that guy is. But Rav Hirsch, right? Rav Hirsch did not translate the animals because he wasn't sure. And it's important because if you write down the wrong animal, then that animal is kosher and the other ones are not. It's important to be able to know this. But there are those that say, there's a machlokas, whether you even need a mesorah to eat these types of animals. There's a chokhmas adam and klau lamed vav din aleph that says, his opinion is based on the shach, that you need a mesorah on animals as well. Meaning, even if a giraffe is kosher, which it seems like it is, right? Because that split hooves, that chews its cud. There's no problem with shachting it. You can shacht anywhere in the neck. When I learned Hilchos Shechita, you can go anywhere in the neck. So there's no issue with shachting it. The big problem with a giraffe is that in order to shacht really big animals, you usually need to turn them upside down. Because you've seen a giraffe before, right? So to stand up on a chair and go all the way up there and to go like that is not the easiest thing in the world to be able to cut through the esophagus and the trachea. So you'd have to like turn it around and put it upside down to be able to go like that, right? There's issues with chalada, whatever it is, right? But it's easier to go like that. If you turn a giraffe around, giraffes have these huge hearts, huge. They're like 10 times the size of a human being's heart, right? If you turn a giraffe upside down, and the reason why you need that heart is because obvious, right? How do you get blood pumping all the way to the brain and all the way down to the feet? You see these 7-footers in the NBA, and they all have plantar fasciitis, right? And all these problems of circulation. They're 7 feet, and they have problems because their heart is not able to pump their blood fast enough. By a giraffe, you can imagine that's a problem. So if you turn a giraffe over in order to shecht it properly, its heart bursts. And that means it becomes a trefa right before you shecht it. That's really a problem. Aside from the fact that they're also endangered. That's also an issue, right? But even, I'm sorry? They aren't, most of them. I mean, if you do with the Maasai giraffe, the reticulated giraffe is better, but it's still in, I think it's like the vulnerable category. But all the other ones are really problematic, right? Those are when you run into real problems. There's 9 subspecies, I think, of giraffe altogether that are still alive today. By the way, and technically you'd be able to do it. But do you have a mesorah for it? Are you positive that it's kosher? Are you positive that the zomer that's mentioned at the end of the parsha is really the giraffe? That's a little bit of a shiloh. Now, although we do have the chizkuni, the Chizkuni says that the Zomer is a giraffe. Rav Sadia Gaon says it's a giraffe. The Radak in Shoroshim says it's a giraffe. Right? However, do you really want to do that? Do you want to take that chance? We have a lot more over here, guys. There's a crazy amount, but we'll have to stop with this. Have a great Shabbos.
Isn't that Masorah pretty good? That's pretty far back.
It is pretty far back. It is. It is. You're 100%. And we could probably rely on it. It's just a Shilin when you're dealing with something like musk ox. What about that? Guys, we're going
to
dive in Marv right now, if possible, okay?
I forgot where, but like for birds, they used to do kapharos there, but like they had rabbits and all sorts of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you remember it. There used to be a place we used to go for kapharos.
Oh, yeah, and the Divan in Western. They still have it.
That place. It was like farther south. I feel like
oh, there is one right there, Divan in Western.
Yeah, that's the Muslim place. Another one.
Way in the back of the day, like 20 years ago. And I remember my dad wanted to get pheasants. He was there and he's like, hey, you know what, can you shuck me some pheasants? And the guy